Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biaja, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, November 24th, 2014. Sudan government and rebel groups from different factions resume peace talks in Addis.
The government of Sudan, the GEM, and that delegation is here, and the SLA Minaminawi. To deal with the question of ending the war in or the conflict in Darfur.
And Juba is holding a one-day consultative talks with state and national government officials in search of finding an end to the 11 months of conflict.
This conference, the talks, is extremely very important because it will give the legitimacy of the outcome of the peace agreement. It will give the local ownership of the peace agreement. It is a manifestation that whatever we're going to sign in Addis truly reflects the people, the will of the people of South Sudan.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The government in Khartoum and rebel groups from Darfur kicked off talks in Addis Ababa yesterday. The talks go hand in hand with negotiations between the government and SPLM North rebels from Blue Nile in southern Kordofan. Those talks were adjourned last week for further consultations on ways to end the conflict in the two areas. Two major rebel groups from Darfur are taking part in the new round of talks with Khartoum. They are the Justice and Equality Movement led by Mohamed Ibrahim Jibril and the Sudan Liberation Movement led by Minni Minnawi. Former South African President Thabo Mbeki is the head of the African Union High Implementation Panel mediating the talks.
We have convened in Addis Ababa now here at the headquarters of the African Union to begin discussions between the government of Sudan, and the delegation is here, with GEM, and that delegation is here, and the SLA Minaminawi, to deal with the question of ending the war in or the conflict in Darfur.
A third faction of the rebel coalition in Darfur, the Sudan Liberation Army Abdul Wahid Mohamed Noor, is not attending the talks. Yesterday's opening session was attended by envoys from the African Union, the United Nations, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, and the United Nations African Union Mission in Darfur, or UNAMID. Mbeke praised Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir's call for a national dialogue to address the many problems facing Sudan.
We were very, as a panel, we were very excited about that because indeed we had been discussing this matter with the government for some time of the need to have that kind of comprehensive look at the challenges facing the country. As I say, we're indeed very happy that the president made that call, including what he said concerning the need to ensure that that process was inclusive, and in detailing what he meant by an inclusive process, of course, mentioned that the armed movements need to be part of that dialogue.
Becky says the armed groups from Darfur and the government of Sudan have assured him that they want the same thing:
a holistic solution to the challenges facing Sudan. That a piecemeal solution wouldn't work. So to that extent, it was clear that there was agreement about the need for the kind of inclusive national dialogue which President Bashir called for.
Mbeke says the peace talks for Darfur and separate negotiations to end the conflicts in Blue Nile and southern Kordofan should be brought together so that a comprehensive peace agreement can be reached for Sudan. Sudan's chief negotiator at the talks, Dr. Amin Omar Hassan, said in his opening remarks that Khartoum is committed to ending the war in Darfur by implementing the Doha document for peace, which was signed in 2011 by the government and the rebel groups in Darfur. It has so far failed to end more than a decade of fighting in the western part of Sudan. The negotiators representing the two rebel groups called the Doha document a failure. They say what Sudan needs is a comprehensive agreement to address how the country is ruled. They say that is the underlying problem which Sudan must resolve in order to restore peace. The war in Darfur broke out in 2003 and has claimed more than 300,000 lives and displaced more than 2 million people, according to the United Nations. Khartoum has put the death toll closer to 10,000. Mr. Bashir is wanted for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur by the International Criminal Court in The Hague.
And in South Sudan, government officials today convened a one-day consultative conference designed to improve dialogue between all political parties of the peace talks. This comes ahead of the expected resumption of the suspended IGAD-led peace talks around the end of the month. For VOA News, Waki Wudu Simon reports from Juba.
The conference was organized by the Ministry of Cabinet Affairs, which is headed by Elia Lomuro. It was aimed at improving prospects and minimizing challenges of the peace talks on the government side, Lomuro says. The event brought together hundreds of delegates from state and national government agencies, including the governors of all the 10 states and the speakers of all the national and state legislatures. Representatives of the international community and civil society were also in attendance. The government's chief negotiator during the talks in Addis Ababa, Nyal Deng Nyal, guided participants through a number of issues his delegation has been debating with the rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar over the last 9 months.
The latest developments in the South Sudan peace process, and specifically the recently concluded extraordinary IGAD summit and the direct negotiations conducted by the President of the Republic and the rebel leader Riek Machar, need to be put into the appropriate context.
Niel asserts that his delegation and the rebels' negotiators have achieved some important progress. He says both agreed to a cessation of hostilities, keeping Juba as the national capital throughout the period of the transitional government, and agreed to a federal system of government. Despite that progress, Niel says major points of contention between the two sides remain, such as
issues of the structure of the transitional government of national unity and the powers of the president and the prime minister. The issue of the structure represents a key area of disagreement. The powers of the president and the prime minister is also another key area of disagreement.
Niel also says another key issue concerns the principle of resource and finance management. Who will run the government's finances? How will resources be allocated to each of the 10 states? These discussions have not yet begun. Last week, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, which has been mediating the dialogue between the government and the rebels, adjourned the peace talks for 2 more weeks. The move was intended to give the two warring parties adequate time to more fully examine core issues of disagreement. IGAD also adjourned the talks about 2 weeks ago after the two parties failed to agree on some key issues. Niel says today's conference was mandated by IGAD as a way to allow parties to consult with the stakeholders at home regarding the progress of the talks. Local media organizations are reporting that rebel leader Riek Machar is holding a similar consultative conference in the Upper Nile region in a village called Pagak. Benny Gideon is a civil society representative at the Addis Ababa Peace Talks who attended today's conference in Juba.
This conference of the talks is extremely very important because it will give the legitimacy of the outcome of the peace agreement. It will give the local ownership of the peace agreement. It is a manifestation that whatever we're going to sign in Addis truly reflect the people, the will of the people of South Sudan.
But some opposition political parties boycotted today's government conference even though they were invited. Yesterday, opposition leader Lama Kol Ajawin and leaders of other opposition parties told journalists at a Juba news conference that they would participate only if government officials allowed them to take part in the Addis Ababa talks. Last month, Lam said government officials have denied that request. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu from Juba.
UNAMID, the UN African peacekeeping mission in Darfur, has been reportedly told by the Sudan government to prepare to leave the region. Sudan's Minister of Information, Ahmed Bilal, says the inability of the mission to protect itself has brought on extra responsibility for the Sudan government and military. Tensions between the government and UNAMID have been rising since a report surfaced 2 weeks ago that Sudanese army soldiers raped about 200 women in the village of Tabat, just outside the North Darfur capital, Al-Fashir. Bilal tells VOA's James Batty the UN mission already investigated the claims and found them to be false.
In fact, actually, we asked them if they wouldn't stop interfering in our affairs, they have to leave. One reason is that the incapability of the keeping force to protect themselves. When they move, they need the army to move with them and to protect them. And their major, actually, task is to protect the people. And now they need protection for themselves.
The allegations, Mr. Minister, is that there have been some violation or crimes against some civilians in the region. And so the United Nations Secretary General has even asked your government to allow for this investigation to take place.
They did, actually. They asked for this, and because they need protection, the army went with them, and they did investigations. They moved freely. No interference from the army happened. And they announced that these allegations are untrue. And they finished. After that, some people say, no, there is a heavy army presence there, and this is made some sort of pressure, and they want to repeat this again. I think any reputable country would not at all agree for such an allegations and for such things to be repeated and repeated and to be even actually mentioned like that. I sent an airplane with 50 journalists. They went there freely. They asked the people. They were all the women there protesting, saying this is just something which again is their pride and defamation for them. Nothing had happened. According only to an allegation from a local radio there saying there was a mass rape, and they have investigated and they found nothing.
The mission of UNAMID should expire in March next year. Did your government already request that they should leave?
No. We didn't actually ask them to evacuate immediately. This is a procedure. We know it. They cannot go stuff like this. We said that if you didn't cooperate, we can end it. And we know they are offering nothing. $600 million of dollars every year comes to them. They are doing some sort of luxurious things. They import even water. Even water, which we are a country full of water, we have actually this inside of that. They are importing fruits, water, meat, vegetables from outside. Why is this? I think this is an interest for some companies.
That was Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal speaking to VOA's James Batty yesterday from Khartoum.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, details are released about South Sudan and Egypt's recent bilateral agreements. That story is coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who would you go to first with your problems and why?
My mother, because she treats us like we are equals, we are friends, so I go to her with my problems.
My mom is always closer to my heart, and she knows when I'm in trouble and she knows when I'm not in trouble. So if I'm depressed, of course I'll go to my mom because she's always understanding, more than my dad.
Maybe a pastor, just because maybe he can assist me in some issues that I don't really understand.
I would go to a friend first because I'm very open with friends, more than parents themselves.
God will be the first person because he's the one who knows who I really am, so he'll be the first person.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan officials are offering specifics of numerous bilateral agreements reached between South Sudan President Salva Kiir and his Egyptian counterpart Abdel Fattah al-Sisi following their recent meeting in Cairo. The agreement signed on Saturday will yield several projects for South Sudan worth about $26.5 million. Philip Thornaleo has the story for VOA from Juba.
Awana Riag, the minister in President Kiir's office, briefed reporters in Juba yesterday about the details of President Kiir's trip to Cairo last week. Riag says the nine ministers and several businessmen who accompanied President Kiir met with the Egyptian counterparts and agree on many projects.
These included the areas of water and electricity, education, youth and sports, petroleum, and many other things, including the health. So it was a very successful visit, and both countries are looking to close their ties together to benefit from the expertise of one another and also the resources that are in our country.
Riag says Egyptian President El-Sisi held a one-to-one meeting with President Kiir to discuss issues of mutual interest to both countries. South Sudan and Egypt are members of the Nile Basin Initiative, or NBI, which brings together nations connected by the Nile River. Other members of NBI are Burundi, Rwanda, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Sudan. Egypt is a loggerhead with Ethiopia over the construction of multimillion-dollar Ethiopian dams that Egypt says will dramatically reduce the volume of the Nile River. Minister Riag says Ethiopian new dams on the Nile and their impact on Egypt, South Sudan, and other countries in the NBI were discussed by the two leaders.
The issues to do with the Nile water, where we need to clear the River Nile so that more water could go, because these are all things that were embodied in the visit, and we are looking forward to see them progressing.
The access, clearing the Nile, which involves removing sand and cutting papyrus, will also allow river transportation between Sudan, South Sudan, and Egypt to resume. He says transporting goods by water will be much cheaper than transporting them by air, which is how companies in Cairo and Juba normally do business. Both countries also agreed to collaborate on 10 water projects worth $26 million, which are slated to start next month. Riag declined to say specifically where those projects will be located in South Sudan. But Egyptian media report that the agreements include technical support to South Sudan officials and management of water resources along the Nile River. Egypt relies on the Nile River for agricultural irrigation and home use, such as electricity and washing. The Egyptian government also provides South Sudan with power stations in Bor, Yambio, and Rumbek. Some analysts believe the cooperative agreement between Juba and Cairo is an attempt to dissuade the world's newest nation from constructing hydroelectric dams on the Nile. For BOA News, I am Philip Thornaleo in Juba.
The United Nations World Food Program, or WFP, has resumed airborne food drops in South Sudan's Twitch East County in Jonglei State. WFP stopped food drops in Twitch 4 months ago because of flooding and insecurity. WFP says the food is aimed at bringing relief to tens of thousands of internally displaced persons in Jonglei State. Jacob Achek reports from Juba.
Twitch East County Commissioner Dao Akoy-Jurkuch says World Food Program's planes resumed food drop in Panyagur and Mar on Monday morning.
The cargo I dropped 3 times, and we all believe we will come back again for today. I think we will continue dropping. I don't know actually how many tons that is supposed to drop, but they will be dropping in Panyagur here, and also can be dropped in Mar. So they have two zones that they are going to drop the food.
Commissioner Akoy says there are at least 37,000 IDPs in Twitch East who desperately need food. They flew violent in neighboring Duke County earlier this year.
The people of Twitch have been scheduled food almost for 4 months, and we have been appealing to the WFP so that to bring the food. We have been appreciating the effort that the humanitarian Australian West put forward.
Dao Akoy says they hopes the airdrop of food stoops like sorghum, lentil, and wheat flour will help the people in Twitch East County avoid hunger. The WFP cargo planes are also delivering cooking oil, but this cannot be dropped from the air. the planes have to land to deliver it. WFP spokesperson in South Sudan, George Pomian, said the UN agency focused in emergency food delivery on part of South Sudan that are difficult to reach, either because of the fighting, flooding, inaccessibility by road or remoteness.
WFP and its partners have been using mobile operations where we get in with our partners and our staff into hard-to-reach areas of the country. We are planning to reach close to 39,000 people in Twitch East County and provide support in terms of food assistance.
Since South Sudan plunged into crisis 11 months ago, WFP has reached 2.5 million people with life savings, food and nutrition assistance. WFP is the world's largest humanitarian agency fighting hunger worldwide. It delivers food assistance during emergency and works with communities to improve nutrition and build resilience. In 2013, WFP assisted more than 80 million people in 75 countries. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
Still in Jonglei State, in recent months, educational issues have focused on just two things, delayed housing allowances and a strike by frustrated teachers. But the larger question remains, what is the overall quality of education in Jonglei? Insiders say the disruption caused by a combination of the nation's ongoing conflict, the lack of training and abandoned school facilities have dealt a serious blow. Jacob Achek has this report from Juba.
On the one hand, some observers say education in Jonglei is progressing as well as can be expected, at least in areas under government control, but the overall performances are being hampered by the South Sudan crisis. Jonglei State's Education Minister Tut Kuen Yang says that out of 414 schools that were operating throughout most of 2013, only 190 are open today. The rest have been abandoned. Of those functioning schools, many have deteriorated following the onset of the last December violence, which began in Juba and separated to the three states of Upper Nile, Unity, and Jonglei. Education Minister Tut says it is difficult to compare the current year's educational status to previous years due to the crisis, but he said there had been some academic improvement. An official has been able to refurbish some primary and secondary schools affected by the conflicts.
Now we have done with the academic year. We are looking ahead for the new academic year. So we want our kids, regardless of the situation, has to go to the school. And we also call upon our people that let the girl also enroll in education. If we want this country to be developed, we need all our people, our kids, need to go and invest in education.
Mariari Gabriel Akol, a student at Dr. John Garang University, say that of both towns, 9 secondary schools, only 2 are operational.
Some of the schools are not functioning, like Alliance High School is not functioning now. That means the percentage of this year progress in education is not comparable with the last year. What I know, Malek was divided into two. There was Malek's secondary school for English and that of Arabic. So Malek is not working now, and Alliance is not totally working.
Tut said there are no schools operating in Duke, Akobo, and Ayut counties. There are functioning schools, Bor, Twitch East, Pibor, and Pochala counties. Tut said a lack of infrastructure is one of the biggest challenges faced by the Ministry of Education. He said many schools were burnt down during the violence and teaching material, including textbooks, were destroyed.
I think with the sack of challenges that are facing the state and also the infrastructure of education, demolished by the crisis, but we have take off with the education, with the resources that we have. Quite a number of schools are open.
But Deng Magot, a teacher at Malek Secondary School, said there are other important issues to be considered when analyzing the quality of education in Jonglei.
There are many factors that can making education to tie down. Education is for nation building. So So we can build a nation through education. We have to train people so that they can also rebuild the country. So we cannot put more money on building structures, but we have to put more money by building human beings and teaching human beings skills.
University student Marielle Gabriel Akol warned Yonglei officials to make education their top priority so that the South Sudan can achieve progress.
There are teachers, but not all that enough, because some of the teachers fled and even some of the students fled the area, and they are told to come back and they are not accepting. Some of them have left for the NGOs because, you know, sometimes the payment of the government is not that favorable compared to the one of the NGO, you know.
State government spokesperson Judy Jonglei last week asked state educational officials to set up their effort to reopen a school and support students. This came after the state budget had been approved. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Nabil. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel is stepping down after nearly 2 years in the position. The New York Times, citing senior administration officials, first reported today that the resignation comes under pressure amid several foreign policy crises, including the ongoing battle against the Islamic State militant group in Syria and Iraq. The defense chief announced his decision to the nation this past hour. He was flanked by President Barack Obama on his right and Vice President Joe Biden on his left. Like U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, who resigned in September, Hagel has said he will remain in the position until a successor is confirmed. Somali militant group al-Shabaab is denying Kenya's claim that its forces have killed more than 100 al-Shabaab fighters. Kenya says it launched raids along the Somali border after al-Shabaab attacked a bus in northeastern Kenya, killing 28 people on Saturday. There is anger towards the government for failing to protect Kenyans from the militants. Pressure is mounting on the Kenyan government to provide evidence that its forces indeed killed more than 100 al-Shabaab militants operating along the Kenya-Somalia border. Police and witnesses said gunmen ambushed the bus and killed 28 non-Muslims who were singled out from the 60 passengers. And finally, Iranian and Western diplomats say nuclear talks between Iran and six world powers will be extended through June. They spoke in Vienna on the final day of the group's self-imposed year-long period to agree on a comprehensive deal to ensure that Iran's nuclear program is for peaceful purposes only. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Coco by a U.S.-based South Sudanese musician, Sultan Clinton.
So just to know how we got to cross off your tokona. Nalala opie, kotoru jana la kadi rasta ipi kate mufaka. Hey, mami yo, kana bikure le muluye. Koko, 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 sibana, sibana. Koko, 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 ba de kotoru jana la kadi mix submayo, la kadi fusub meleki. Karanta mo ababes, bitamaro karanta zato bikisi. Le Ernesto paterno a papa Marino Lino Kelo Antoni mi famille and the Congo John Tanza
alle mamma na
Congo mo habare ma deru galba surbe gua sibana sibana.
We have been listening to Sultan Clinton with that song Coco. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biagio, also in Washington. Thanks for tuning us in. We hope you join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm gonna show you.